Hello, it's Trev here with you. Trevor Keegan, hightailing it through the highlights of RTE Radio 1 for Friday, the 2nd of May, 2025. And this is just some of what you'll hear in the next 57 minutes.
It is a 13-foot wide ceremonial drum, carefully painted with symbols of the old Celtic wheel.
Educate a woman or empower a woman. You educate and empower the whole community.
You parked a bus.
I reversed it into parking space and showed Tina said, you would have passed your test on that.
Are you serious?
Oh my, put it on my gravestone.
Controversy rumbles on around the new Housing Activation Authority, despite the man who was the preferred person to be appointed as its CEO, NAMA Chief Brendan McDonagh, saying he's no longer interested in the job. All of that, of course, after political backlash around his salary of €450,000. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald is one of those berating the setting up of the authority in the first place. She spoke to Maggie Doyle on Morning Ireland, and the bit of extra background noise is because she was in transit in a car during the interview.
House prices go up, homeless figures go up, the number of homes being built goes down, the housing czar nominee is out. The government, it seems, is under continuing pressure to sort out the problem that has dogged the country for many years. One of the solutions from the new Minister for Housing was to get a heavy hitter to head up the new Housing Activation Office. But when news of the NAMA chief Brendan McDonagh potentially keeping his €430,000 salary broke, it became a political controversy and he ruled himself out of the running yesterday evening. To talk about this and more, the Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald joins us. You and members of your party have called this position outrageous, a shambles, an expensive job share. What's your reaction to Brendan McDonagh now withdrawing from consideration for the job?
Well, we had raised this issue with Micheál Martin and Simon Harris throughout the week in the Dáil. And what really struck home was they were completely unable to describe or explain or rationalise the role of this czar position, except to set out tasks that rightfully fall to the Minister for Housing. There already is a heavy hitter, somebody charged with the responsibility to increase supply, to deal with what is and has been now for too many years a real crisis in Irish society and a crisis for Irish people, young and old, and they have abjectly failed. And I think they have demonstrated yet again that they have no plan. It seems to me that they're in full-blown panic mode now, in utter disarray. And it took the biscuit, and it really was the last word that their big idea, having come back into government, was to hire somebody on almost €500,000 to essentially job share with the minister, as we put it. So there's a real problem here, and it goes beyond, of course, the proposition of this ill-defined czar. This is just more distraction politics and ass covering, quite frankly, by a government that has failed in housing and that continues to fail. And it's deeply, deeply worrying that we're in this cycle again of failure and botch, led by Micheál Martin and Simon Harris.
Okay, let me ask you.
100,000 Irish-born people now living in Australia. That's the net result.
Yeah, many of those, I'm sure, have gone there out of their own choice, and it might not be anything to do with the housing crisis. Let's be clear. Now, you do say that this was about splashing the cash. You asked the Taoiseach to set out the salary level. How much do you think whoever does end up heading up the Housing Activation Office should get? What is the ideal salary?
I think the minister for housing is in charge of housing. That's what I think.
Yeah, but if you think that 430,000...
I do not approve of hiring more and more layers of bureaucracy and highly paid bureaucrats to camouflage the fact that the people at Cabinet are failing to do their job. That's my position.
Okay,
the Minister
can I ask
for
you-
Housing... leads on housing.
Can I ask you then about your own proposal that you published in September 2024? And I'm reading here from your manifesto at the time, a home of your own housing document, in which you suggested that you, Sinn Féin, would introduce the Housing Delivery Oversight Executive. Now,
yes.
You do say this was not going to be another layer of bureaucracy, but
correct.
Presumably it was going to be manned in some way? Who was going to run that executive? And how is it different to the government's idea?
Led by the minister.
So that, it was going to be...
That's who
so
leads.
Nobody... So the minister was going to be the Minister for Housing,
yes,
and also the Housing Delivery Oversight Executive.
The minister and the very considerable civil service network in and around the department, they are responsible. The resources are there. The issue in housing delivery isn't a lack of personnel, isn't a lack of officials. That's not the problem here. The problem we have is a problem of policy, a problem of pace, and a problem of leadership. The case for coordination in terms of delivery of critical infrastructure and land, all of that case has been made. It's been made by the Housing Commission. We totally accept that, and hence our proposal in our manifesto.
So the proposal really...
What we did not countenance and will not countenance is creating another highly paid job, another layer of bureaucracy in the ill-defined, chaotic fashion in which the government have attempted here.
Okay,
that's the distinction.
What's interesting is that when you said in your manifesto that you would establish the executive immediately, there was no mention at all that it would be headed up by the Minister for Housing.
Well, can I just say, unless we have gone down a complete rabbit hole in Irish society, I would have thought it goes without saying that the Minister for Housing, themselves on a significant salary and sitting at Cabinet, leads on housing. I didn't think it was necessary to explicitly state that, but let me take the opportunity to do so this morning.
Okay. Now, can I move on, if we can, please, just to another issue, which is the Grace case. It was brought up again in the Dáil yesterday. You say the Farrelly Commission failed to answer crucial questions. What would you like to see happen next?
Well, it was only when I was at the statements yesterday and listening to the contributions of everyone, colleagues from across the Dáil, in particular John McGuinness, that, you know, you recall the absolute brutality and just the horror of what Grace endured. And remember, it's not just her. There were 47 other children, now adults and people of concern. So the first thing is, I don't think as a Dáil, and I certainly don't think the government should simply accept that those other 47 experiences should not be investigated, considered in the way in which the Farrelly report suggests. Secondly, I think there needs to be a forensic and a considered reflection within the Oireachtas on the report itself. My colleague, Mairis Quinlivan, who now chairs the Disability Committee, has asked that Farrelly come before that committee. I think there is an absolute necessity for that to happen. The report itself...
Has he asked Marjorie Farrelly directly? Has she been invited officially to the Oireachtas Committee?
Well, bear in mind, the committees are only being established now, so that will happen in due course. Mairis has only officially come into post now, but that will happen. And I really hope that that invitation is positively received, because the report itself is 2,000 pages long. It's a difficult read, but core questions aren't answered. A team of Sinn Féin people have delved through it. I'm in the process of reading it. It's 2,000 pages. I've attempted to read it online. I'm now going to read it in paper copy. It's just so vast. Core questions, certainly, that I have had for a long time haven't been answered in this report. Questions around, we know the system failed, Grace, but on those occasions when it actually stepped up and responded to her situation, when a decision was made to remove her from the home of Family X, that decision was appealed by Family X, that appeal failed. Then there was a political lobby. The decision was overturned. I think it's really important that we understand in a very, very clear-cut way what exactly happened there. It's important we understand and confront why it was that Grace had no visits from social workers. How it was that despite the best efforts of good people who stepped forward on her behalf, that this unfortunate child and then young woman and adult spent 20 years of what can only be described as a living hell, a vulnerable, non-verbal woman and girl in those circumstances. And yet people knew full well, the system knew.
Okay.
And we have to get under the bonnet of that and really understand that. And I have no doubt that for people who love Grace, who advocated for and who will be concerned for the other 47 children, now adults as well, there has to be some level of accountability. And the system, as well as individuals, the system itself needs to be held to scrutiny and held to account.
We all love to bag a bargain, but it seems a cat in Galway took it to a whole new level when she set up home in the wall of a Deals shop in Athenry. Oliver Callan found out more about this firebrand feline.
Customers and employees were very concerned for the welfare of the cat, so they called on Tara Croke, who is the cattery manager with the Galway SPCA. Good morning to you, Tara.
Morning, Oliver. How are you?
Not so bad. How did the cat manage to get stuck behind the wall of a Deals?
So, it's like the cat actually wasn't stuck. So the cat could come and go freely. That's why it took so long, because we weren't, not that we weren't worried, we were, but the cat had free roam of the whole roof and was able to get out. So the first couple of weeks were kind of trying to establish why the cat was going in and whether or not we needed to intervene. But as kind of the weeks went on, the calls got a little more distressed and the cat sounded like it really did need our help. So thankfully the Deals manager and the Deals head office were so accommodating. They, anything we needed, they accommodated us with, whether it was getting up onto the roof or in the end getting a hole drilled in their wall to be able to take the cat out. So we were just really lucky on the Monday that we arranged to do it. The cat got herself into a corner and they were able to secure her in that corner and keep her there until I could get there. And so then we went about drilling and drilling and cutting holes in walls.
Yeah, people were wondering how on earth a cat would survive for 6 weeks, but the cat was coming in and out and then getting stuck repeatedly inside the walls.
So she was going down this like cavity, like this pillar pile thing, and she was climbing down in it, sitting down there, crying to her heart's content all day long, and then going back out. But we had seen that she was going out and we had seen that she was coming in. Now, I don't know what happened in the last week, that she obviously wasn't going out as much as she used to, because she definitely wasn't eating. You know, she was really skinny when we did get her.
Yeah.
So whatever happened, but like, she's such a sweet cat. We just can't believe that nobody has come looking for her. She was definitely somebody's pet.
I love the way that you had a sort of a detective way of finding out how that the cat is indeed getting in. Tell us what you did.
So we had to call upon the very nice builders working on the building next door to give us a ladder. So we were up on the roof. We had poured powder down around the holes, like talcum powder, where we thought she might be coming and going. And we could see the paw prints of her coming in and going out.
Very
so
clever.
We were fairly confident she could actually get out.
The powdered paws, and you see the cat prints.
Cat prints. So we knew she could, but I'd said for some reason in the last week, she just didn't.
You're the cattery manager, so you know a lot about cats. Why would the cat continue to go in and out of a place where then it ends up screaming in discomfort?
I can only imagine that she was either lost or abandoned, and she was just looking for, because it was people. It was when she could hear the people in the shop, she was going in. And then she was calling and looking for it. So we weren't sure if it was a cat that had kittens in there or if it was, you know, we didn't know what it was. So as I said, it was a lot of trying to figure that out as well before we took any serious action.
Mad for Deals, this cat was, looking for the cheap Maltesers.
Well, mad for the staff of Deals, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she was only there when they were there. She was never there after hours.
So you're the hero who rescued the cat. The cat is a very young cat and is in poor enough condition when she came
very
out.
Very young cat, yeah, but she's starting to put on weight now, and as I said, she's just a fabulous little cat, so we're delighted with her.
Where is the cat, and have you given it a name?
So her name is Deals, and she's in our cattery in Briar Hill. So we have a cattery and a small animal unit in Briar Hill, along with our shop. So one of our four shops. So she is getting lots of TLC in there, and we're hoping that we'll get her into a foster home really soon.
And her little paws were obviously damaged from scrambling in and out of the...
There were. Her nails got quite damaged. Now, we're confident they will grow back eventually. It was just from just climbing up and down constantly. It was really just, it was just doing a lot of damage to her nails and stuff.
Oh my God.
But she's happy and comfortable.
Are you busy in your job, Tara?
We're busy. It's kitten season. We're always busy. So it is, yeah, it's constant. Like, there's a massive issue with cats and overpopulation of cats, and TNR is really the only way forward, you know, but that requires funding. And unfortunately, at the moment, funding's a bit low. So,
but you're doing fantastic work with the Galway SPCA.
We're doing our best.
And all of them around the country. Tara Croke, thanks a million. Have a lovely weekend.
Most of us have been basking in the beautiful weather over the last few days. But as we know, a long spell of sunshine can cause trouble for our water supplies. So Ishka Éireann has announced a six-week-long hosepipe ban for three areas from next week. Gavin Jennings got the details for us on Morning Ireland.
A week of sunshine, record temperatures for April, it's May the 2nd, and a hosepipe ban, or water conservation order. From Tuesday, for 6 weeks, in Mullingar in County Westmeath, Milford in County Donegal, and Kells in County Meath, for now. Margaret Attridge is with us. She's head of water operations at Ishka Éireann. Why these orders, Margaret Attridge, where they are, and why now?
Yeah, good morning, Gavin. And look, while this warm weather might be welcome and it is putting some pressure on our water sources, it's not the main reason for the water conservation order. The main reason is that over the last 12 months, particularly in the winter months, some places in Ireland have had very little rainfall in comparison to other years. And it's over the winter months that our lakes and our aquifers, our underground water stores, recharge, they refill, and they keep us going through these drier summer months until it rains again over the winter. And just because in some areas the recharge hasn't happened to the extent it usually does, some of our lakes are at historically low levels. And the lakes that supply the three schemes that you just mentioned in Milford and Donegal, Kells in Kells Oldcastle in County Meath, and Milford and Mullingar, the lakes that supply those areas are at historically low levels. And we need to put in place the water conservation really to protect our supplies so that we can maintain the supplies we have for essential services throughout the next few weeks.
Do you expect more orders, more bans?
We are continuously to monitor all our 700 supplies. We have a further 11 schemes that we will put into a drought category, and that means that we are doing some work. They're under stress. We're doing some work like tankering to reservoirs, additional leakage crews on these schemes. So we are maintaining the supplies. Water. We have put in water restrictions by night in some areas to keep the supply going during the day. But we will continue to monitor all our schemes. And if the weather continues to remain dry, there is a possibility that we could have to extend the water conservation order to other areas.
If you're a bit of a green finger guru, you might be worried about what all those water restrictions could mean for your flora and fauna. But there is help at hand. Cue the green cape-clad Philip Boucher-Hayes, filling in on today with Claire Byrne.
Ishka Éireann has announced a six-week-long hosepipe ban to be introduced from next Tuesday in three parts of the country because of historically low water levels. It raises the questions as to whether we should think locally when planting, and got us to thinking, what if we only had the kind of plants in our garden that don't require constant sprinkling and hosing down? Pora Corkin, horticulturist, garden expert and owner of Horkin's Garden Centre, joins me on the line now. Good morning, Pora. How are you?
Good morning, Philip, from a beautiful, sunny and warm Mayo. It's absolutely gorgeous here.
Oh, glad to hear that you're getting the weather on the west side of the island that you so richly deserve.
Absolutely.
Pora, before we get into choice of plants, might it be the case that people are just using the hose pipes a little bit too liberally anyway, because it's quite a pleasurable thing to do, to stand there and just spray water around the place?
And there's absolutely no need for it at the moment, Philip, because if you remember, we've had a dry period in March, followed by some warm weather, but then we had quite a bit of rain and followed by this quite warm period at the moment. So there's a storage of water. The soil is holding a huge amount of water in the ground at the moment. And most plants have just come into leaf in the last 10 days, the last 14 days. So they're just actively growing at the moment. So for established trees and shrubs and hedging plants and roses and all the common garden plants, there is absolutely no need to water them. unless you've got them in pots or containers, then certainly keep an eye on them. Okay. But for most established plants that are planted last year or last autumn or in the early spring, they're perfectly fine. There's no need to be getting the hose out. Your lawn, for example, I mean, the lawn is one of the first areas that will tell us when water shortages are apparent in the garden, because the lawn will go yellow, it'll go discoloured. But if you leave it alone, within a couple of weeks, as soon as we get a drop of rain, the lawn pops back up again. So at the moment, unless you've planted something, say, in the last 6 weeks, maybe some vegetable plants or tomato plants in a greenhouse, you're watering those about once a week at this time of year, at most.
Stick with the lawn for a second now.
Yeah.
Might there be choice of grasses with deeper tap roots that would be more appropriate for providing that little bit of green cover that we all like through those periods of drought?
Absolutely. And generally, when you buy a mixture of lawn seeds within your local garden centre, they're generally a blend. It's like tea, Philip. It's a mixture of different blends of seeds that make up the mixture. So it's not one species of grass, one variety of grass within the mix. It tends to be a blend of different mixes. And generally speaking, a number two lawn seed, like green velvet, is a blend of five different grasses, which are slow growing. They give you that lovely rich green colour, as the name suggests, but they're also tolerant of drier periods. So they tend to be better.
Okay.
But it takes an exceptional summer. I mean, you know, we generally don't see, maybe in on the East Coast and parts of Dublin, you might get a short period in a really warm summer where the lawn goes brown. But we don't see it here in the west of Ireland, I can tell you that much, or very, very seldom.
All right.
And even if we get dry period, Philip, there is no need to water the grass, because the grass will come back. It may go brown for a couple of weeks, but it's going to come back
again. It will absolutely come back.
Absolutely.
And I also just looked at the date. It's the 2nd of May, so we should
Correct.
Be leaving those lawns unmown throughout the course of the next couple of weeks and into the summer for the pollinators.
And that's a very good point. If you leave your lawn a little bit longer, it doesn't lose as much moisture. Because if you cut it bare, the sun is getting at the soil. Whereas if you leave it that little bit longer, maybe an inch and a half or
yes.
2 inches, and let the dandelions flower, it'll do
okay.
so much good.
Onto the choice of plants here now.
Yes.
Surely the decision is in the name of the plant, it has occurred to me. Like where you are planting hydrangea, that would
yes.
suggest they need a lot of water. Where you are planting
right.
New Zealand ferns, again, the clue is in the name. They belong
yeah.
in a rainforest in New Zealand and not in Ireland.
Yeah, so plants like ferns, hydrangeas. Hydrangeas, typically the hydro in the name means that they do require quite a bit of water. But they tend to need the water, Philip, when they're flowering. So plants, when they're in bloom during the summer months in July, August, September, are using twice as much moisture as they are during the spring months. So producing leaf colour doesn't cost as much to the plant in terms of water as does the bloom. So you can imagine the big heavy blooms on a hydrangea in June, July and August. It needs more water then. So if we do get a dry period, then certainly they may need some watering. But again, it goes back to an exceptional year that you have to water.
Well, I don't think we need to fear that now, as we know it's going to rain solidly throughout June, July and August.
Yeah.
But presuming that if it didn't, what is the advantage, or is there one to be had, from spreading a bit of mulch over your flower beds?
100%. I mean, I'm looking out at my own garden at the moment, and back in February, I covered all the beds with a layer of bark mulch, fine bark mulch, about 2 inches. And if I scrape it back, the moisture is there right at the top of the surface of the soil. So the bark acts as weed suppressant, but more importantly, it conserves the moisture as well, because it's stopping the sunlight getting to the soil. Hence, it prevents the germination of weeds, but also it prevents the loss of moisture. So mulching beds with bark mulch or mushroom compost is, it not only gives you fantastic weed control, it looks very pretty, but also it conserves moisture. So it's a really good idea, particularly around plants like hydrangeas. Hostas love the moisture as well, as stilbes. There are certain arum lilies. They love a nice moisture retentive soil.
Earlier in the day, we heard how cultural change is being brought about by workshops for boys in Zambia. Maggie Doyle has the details from Morning Ireland.
In a patriarchy where men hold the most power and influence, how can progress be made to ensure women and girls have equal access to opportunities? In Zambia, boys' workshops and school programmes are confronting cultural norms to try and break the cycle of gender inequality. Our reporter Karen Creed and cameraman Brian Walsh travelled to Lusaka, supported by the Simon Cumbers Media Fund, to find out how some initiatives are helping to improve daily life for women and girls. A warm-up ahead of a weekly session of the Men of Honour group. This is a workshop for boys and young men where the focus is on respect and teaching them why women and girls should have the same rights as them. Peter Makuka is the founder and chief executive of Men of Honour.
We see that there's a lot of pressure in the communities for the boy child, for the men, in trying to live up to the expectations of society. And we see that these boys actually go through a lot of difficulties and committing all sorts of crime. Adolescence is a crucial stage. A lot of values and beliefs are formed around this stage. And so we take time to kind of break those deep-rooted cultural beliefs that are negative.
A priority in these discussions is what constitutes violence and giving encouragement to the participants to bring what they learn about positive behaviour into their homes and communities.
So it is about being responsible for themselves but also for people around them and also to spread the positive message. And one of the things that we look at also is positive bystander intervention. We teach them to be able to speak out, to stand up and help prevent the violence rather than encourage it or do nothing about it.
The Gender Equity and Equality Act came into effect in Zambia in 2016. Since then, there's been a lot of investment going into school programs so that both boys and girls can learn about gender equality and consent. Christina Pemba is a civics teacher at the Twin Palms Secondary School in Lusaka.
It can be challenging, actually, upsetting even, because, you know, they already come with something. They're not completely empty. They already have something. So you have to now convince them to say, this is what we are trying to put across. So we start with what they already know. So you ask the children, what do you know about gender equality, for instance? And then they bring out a lot of views. You'll be surprised. Some of the norms, the traditional norms, and they'll bring out all these ideas. So you build on from there.
She says it's difficult for some children who are taught one way at home, with certain rules for certain tribes, and when they come to school, they are taught a different view. The approach now being taken across schools has changed considerably since the time she was a teenager.
I remember back in our day, you know, we'd have chores like we get to sweep, the girls get to sweep, and then the boys would do other things like pick papers because they can't touch the broom. Apparently, according to tradition, the boys should not do things like that. But now we have duty rotas. The first name is a boy. So we make sure that the boys will also hold that broom and they have to sweep. So I think we're balancing it. We're getting somewhere.
Students like Theo and Potemwe show how it's having a positive effect.
Some people have got different mindsets. So I, for one, I'm the monitor in my class, so I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to make changes to that.
A long time ago, they used to say, no, the women should remain home and cook while the guys go out for it. But now it's like everyone gets to work. Yeah, they get to do whatever they want.
And that message of equal access to opportunities is spreading from the classroom to the wider community. In the push for gender equality, football offers a vast playing field. In Zambia, there's a lot of encouragement for women and young girls to get involved. The girls' team at State House Queen's Football Club are being supported by a charity set up by Zambian footballer Rachel Kundananji and her friend Bernadette Deka Zulu, who's been campaigning for gender equality since her teenage years. Bernadette is grateful of the rewards being seen on and off the pitch.
What it means is that parents in our communities, in the daily Zambian average family, is going to let a young girl to go out there and pursue their dreams. It's more than just recreation activities for Zambia now. Football is a lucrative sport, and young women, young girls are changing the narrative, and they're taking Zambia to the global stage through football.
It's clear there's enthusiasm for change, and Bernadette and others who are part of initiatives to make progress on gender equality say it's also about learning from other countries.
As they say, you educate a woman or empower a woman. You educate and empower the whole community. It's now evident when we've seen our women leaders. I want to say that we're proud of our country, but at the same time, we have a long way to go.
we're getting to the part of the programme I've been dreading. I've basically been turning steadily greener by the minute, knowing that this next piece was fast approaching, namely Oliver Callan's visiting critic, author Eimear MacLeishit, who got to fulfil one of my all-time dreams. Jealous much? You bet. Eimear can explain why.
I got to drive a double-decker Dublin bus. I am thrilled with myself.
Are you a driver? Generally, do you like driving?
I do like driving.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I've been driving for 20 plus years and I do enjoy it.
What does it do for you?
Freedom. I grew up in the countryside, in the sticks.
Right.
So freedom to get somewhere when anyone who grew up not adjacent to public transport or walking distance anything knows how important it is to be able to get around. So freedom, being able to just hop into the car and go wherever you want. I'm always very conscious, obviously, of my, you know, carbon footprint and this and that. So I try and not drive when I don't need to. But
use public transport where it's available.
Exactly.
But this is the true independence movement of the Colchis.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
The car.
The car.
So you love a bit of driving. Would you be listening to music or would you be serious? Would you chat?
Back in the day, it would have been a lot of music, a lot of radio. Still listen to the radio a good bit. Have to say that.
Thank you.
Hallowed halls. I listen to a lot of podcasts and audiobooks.
Very good.
I'm in a choir, so sometimes I'm listening to what we call our line tapes because you have to learn what you have to sing at the next rehearsal. So, yeah.
I don't think I've seen people sing out loud on their own in cars, actually.
Yeah, sometimes if I'm on my way to my choir rehearsal, then I hope my choir mistress Roisin is listening. She'll be, I'm the real lickers now. I'll be like,
all the choir people must be singing in their cars.
Oh, they are, yeah. Yeah, we're on our summer break now, but we have rehearsals on a Wednesday evening and I'd say you can see people converging on the rehearsal space, just singing away in their cars.
Oh my God, we must send someone to a choir at some point as a visiting critic. Come here now, it's a crucial question because do you like driving entirely on your own? Do you mind if there's passengers? Because obviously that's the crux of being a bus driver.
I don't mind passengers. I prefer passengers who also know how to drive themselves because I find if you have someone who's not a driver, they'll be like, oh, just park here. And you'll be like, in that person's garden or... lane or drive up that one-way street. So I do prefer someone who kind of knows what they're at. But yeah, I have been wanting to drive a bus or just a bigger vehicle for some time.
Huh.
It's just kind of a, I'd love a go at that.
I always wanted to do this as well. I didn't get to do it. What is it for you?
Just, I think because I like driving and I'm a confident driver, I feel like I think I'd be able to do that. I'd love to give that a go. And you can't say that about a lot of things. And my dad was in the army, but when he retired from the army, he actually got into driving buses and coaches,
oh, really?
Kind of part time.
Yeah.
And he loved it. And my brother drives for a living and he has like an articulated truck license.
Oh, wow.
So
it's in the blood.
It's in the blood. Yeah. So
you're one of the army kids.
Yeah. Now we weren't toted around or anything. We stayed at home. But
you didn't have to live in the Curra or anything?
No. Oh. But I did grow up near the Curra.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, no
basically
choice.
The same thing. No, my dad was in the Air Corps, so he was based in Baldonnell. So, yes. But he also, I think he took... Now, my dad unfortunately passed away in 2008, so I can't ask him about this.
Yeah.
But he did drive for Dublin Bus in the 70s for a time.
Right.
And he drove the number 10, which no longer exists. But
sadly.
Yeah, so it is definitely in the blood.
I think it's a giant steering wheel for me. It's just all that power.
Steering wheel is giant. Yeah.
And it still is.
It's still, yeah, it was pretty big. If I'm trying to remember now. Yeah, it is pretty big. Your arms are stretched out pretty
okay,
wide.
Very good.
And I wasn't sure. I didn't think they were going to let me drive the bus. I thought maybe 5 feet forward or something.
Amazed.
And these are the buttons and then get out again. But no, I was driving. I was going to say I was changing gears. There's no gears. It's automatic.
Is it?
Yeah. Not in exactly the same way as a car in that instead of kind of a... I know for an automatic, you kind of pull, you know, you go from drive to park to neutral, I think, are the three. But it's buttons rather than... Yeah.
Okay, so there's no lever at all.
No, there's the handbrake is very important. There was a lot of handbrake action. No handbrake turns.
And it's a manual, the handbrake?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Yeah. So you've got like a big clunking
It's
lever.
Kind of, yeah, you pull up the little lever and pull
Brilliant.
It back. A very satisfying kind of slotting it into
very
place.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. So tell us, where did you get to do this, by the
this
way?
This was in the Phibsborough bus depot.
This is part of a call out that Dublin Bus is doing in general for drivers, particularly women drivers.
They are trying to recruit more women drivers. Yeah. So they have They have lots more. They were saying back in, I think, 2018, 2019, they had 90-something women drivers. Now they have something like 260. So that's a big jump in, you know, 5 or 6 years. But they want even more. So they're having these open days where you can go. And I've seen these advertised. Before you guys asked me to go along and be the visiting critic, I'd seen this advertised and I was like, do I want to change careers and be a bus driver? Maybe. No. So they're having an open day tomorrow, which is Saturday, May 3rd, and another one on the 24th. And you do need to sign up, but anyone can go. You just have to have a driving license for 2 years.
Oh, right, which a full driver license.
Yeah, so I think it's the B license, which is the kind of the one everyone
And they'll
everyone
train
gets.
You up. And do you get an additional thing in your... I presume you do. Do you?
Yeah, so I think if you... You know, you apply and you get taken on. They train you how to drive a bus and then you do your bus driver's license.
Okay. And then so you did the preliminary version of all of this?
Yeah, yeah.
It's in Phibsborough.
I think they're holding it in Phibsborough. I think if you just Google, you know, Dublin Bus Women Open Day or something,
we'll get the details at the end for sure. And Comirtas, you're in Phibsborough and it's a real double-decker bus.
One of those red ones you see people driving around. Driver in training.
Do they have a big massive yard up there that you could drive
around? Yeah, they have like a big bus park, I suppose you'd call it. Yeah. But it has a kind of like a racing track, but it's not like a racing track. The shape of a racing track.
I see what you mean.
So basically there's an oval that you can drive around and there's enough space.
That's fab. Absolutely.
Yeah,
cool. Really
I couldn't
cool.
believe it. I was like, so I just go, and she was like, yeah, on you go. There was this amazing woman called Tina who has worked for Dublin Bus for quite some time, and she does some of the driver training, and she was telling me how to drive the bus. And they do have in those buses, they have the... So she has controls where she can
right,
hit
like a
the
learner
brake.
Car.
But now she wasn't sitting there for any of my driving training.
Are you
she
serious?
Must have had a lot of confidence. Maybe if I was out on the road, she might have. But no, she was standing beside me, kind of over my left shoulder, telling me how to move off and constantly checking the mirrors. And it was.
The mirrors is also a big attraction for me for the bus. They have giant mirrors.
They
sure
do.
You can
Although
see
the electric buses don't have any mirrors, they have cameras.
Go away.
Now, the bus I was driving wasn't electric, but obviously a lot of the fleet is now electric. So
they've got screens inside.
I think they've got screens
inside. In the
inside.
Cockpit, did you get any terminology? What do they call their driving position?
I don't remember the word cockpit being used, but I do like that because it sounds... When I was sitting in my driver's cockpit, then, you know, I was constantly checking my mirrors, obviously.
Yes.
Because
you're a brilliant driver.
Diligent driver. Yeah, yeah. But one thing that would terrify me now as a bus driver would be cyclists. I am always very conscious of cyclists and not mowing them down.
Yes.
And I see a lot of my fellow drivers are not so conscious of that.
And when you're on the bike, it's the kind of the mirrors of the bus. But then you thankfully realise, oh, they can see us. They know what
they're doing. So I would be...
They're the only vehicle that kind of obeys the cycle lane.
Yeah. I try. Excuse me.
It would appear at times to my biased mind.
So it was brilliant. Like, I couldn't believe I was driving a bus.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of... Once you get into the swing of it, it is kind of... No, it's nothing like driving a car. What am I talking about? The one thing Tina would point... The first thing she said when I got onto it was, like, the front wheels are behind you. So when you're in a car, wheels are slightly in front of you.
Of course.
So you know where they're
the
turning.
The front of the vehicle.
So
around.
You're moving the... So that's why buses, when you see them pulling up, do you know what really annoys me as a driver? You know the white line before a
Thank
traffic
you.
Light?
Yes. Why does nobody understand?
Driving liquors.
We really are, yeah.
The white line before it, like that's so vehicles like buses can make a turn.
Do the swing and most obvious thing in the world. Have they never noticed other buses? And their people go, no, I can get all the way to the traffic light.
I'm going
to
go up as far as I can. My nose is going to be whispering off the other cars that are going kind of perpendicular to me.
I love when the bus drivers use the full use of the horn in those situations. They go, what are you doing? I know there's nothing they can do, but it's hopefully for the next time.
Or the bus driver knows the bus isn't going to make it because some idiot has pulled up too far. But he goes to make the turn anyway and then shames them into having to do some kind of reverse.
That's right.
And he's just sitting, he or she is just sitting there going, come on, Sonny Jim, move.
Some of the manoeuvres buses have to do with delivery vans parked up in the wrong place.
I know.
And extraordinary.
Tiny little squinchy streets.
Yeah.
And
this must be in your head when you're doing the...
Yeah. Now, I wasn't really near anything. There was I went around 10 times maybe this big. Yeah. And there was other buses. There was the odd pedestrian
worker who was walking around. There was a couple of cars and there were, you know, the parked buses. But nothing too close that I could possibly have. But I mean, I could have gone rogue. I didn't, thank God.
Is there a top speed limiter on buses?
I don't know, actually. No. That's a good question.
You don't remember how fast you went at any point?
I wasn't going super fast, no, I have to say. Crawling. But I don't know, do they have it? I don't know if any Dublin bus, I suppose if they're on one of the main roads or on the N11 out there or something, I don't know. I don't know how fast they could get up to.
What buttons did you learn to use other than... So
the buttons to kind of go into drive and park and neutral. I learned there's a button, an emergency button behind a bus driver's left foot. Oh, yeah. So if something is happening and they need help from the control centre or they need them to call the guards, they just move their foot a little bit and press the button.
Very clever.
Yeah.
I hope we haven't given a secret away that...
No.
This is the sad part of the Dublin bus job, isn't it? The antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, no, I did ask about that because I think a lot of people would be afraid of driving the bus. I'd be more afraid of that, of kind of dealing with the public and dealing with tricky customers and dealing with antisocial behaviour. But they said that really doesn't come up as much as you would think. And there's loads of support, like that emergency button, and you can connect and meet, like somebody is always watching where your bus is and what your progress is. Like, you're not on your own.
Yeah.
And I had never really thought about that. I was like, God, it feels a bit lonely sometimes, or would you be afraid? But
is it a good job for women, do you think?
Seems to be, yeah. Like I said, I was asking questions about that. I love when I get on the bus and see a female bus driver. I'm always a bit more like, hello. Yeah. Hello, my friend.
What is she on
about? One of me.
Because it is low. I think I've read 7.7% or something, even with the improvements.
Yeah, yeah.
There's still very few women driving.
Yeah.
But it has very flexible hours. That surely
very
would be a benefit
hours,
for anyone with families.
Lots of different shifts. I was just looking at, like they said, people who drive, new drivers are kind of, you know, they're put across all different kinds of shifts, including night shifts. So there's, you have to be prepared to kind of work all those different shifts. But I'd say, like, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't tempted. Like,
for a career change.
Yeah. Now, I was obviously so good at the bus driving that they reminded me multiple times that they have openings. So I was like, and you know, they have the signs on the side of the bus that are like, earn €860 a week. And I'm like, that's more than you earn writing books.
Oh, no. Surely not with the success of the Aisleens.
Oh, you'd think, wouldn't you?
Before we leave the buses, by the way, you parked a bus.
I reversed it into parking space. And Tina said, you would have passed your test on that.
Are you serious?
Oh my, put it on my gravestone.
Oh my God.
Put it on my gravestone with a little tiny bus.
I'm delighted for Emer. No, I really am. Gritted teeth. But if she does change her career, there might be a few fed up passengers to deal with who are sick of the sounds coming from their fellow commuters. Brian O'Connell told Philip Badger-Hayes exactly what's going on.
In recent weeks, the Lib Dems in the UK proposed a ban on people playing music and videos out loud on their phones on public transport. Under the plan, those who play songs and TV shows from their phone on public transport out loud or while at stations or at bus stops could face a maximum fine of £1,000 sterling. Proportionate? Not far enough? Draconian? What are your thoughts? 51551. Is it, though, at least worthy of a debate about etiquette on public transport on this side of the Irish Sea? Well, Brian O'Connell has been channeling his inner grumpy old man for the programme and taking a look at this for us. Brian, I said that was a bit of a stretch for you. Go into a little bit more detail, will you please, about what it is that they're considering in Britain?
Yeah, I mean, kettle pot black. So essentially, as you said, the Lib Dems are proposing this amendment to the bus services bill. It's a bill that's making its way through Parliament at the moment. It would make loud viewing or listening an offence. So the ban would be promoted through a national publicity campaign. There is a form of this that exists in some countries already. For example, in France, a passenger was fined, I saw, €200 by rail staff after making a phone call on loudspeaker in a quiet area of non-station. So it did get us thinking about this kind of behaviour on public transport. And aside from the loud phone calls or listening to music or videos out loud, what else is a public transport no-no?
Well, if at the very, very least you are going to make a phone call out loud, you should at least try and make it interesting and not make it a getting milk on the way home. Let's hear what various agencies providing public transport have to say. But first, you've actually been talking to some of the people on the buses.
I was in Cork City Centre yesterday morning and I chatted to several people, some of whom would be daily public transport users, and they just gave me their take on some of the things they see on buses and trains.
I have a friend and he gets the bus out the Carrigaline line and sometimes late at night, and he says there's just been an increase in the unruly behaviour, people shouting on the bus, like loud noises, all the social media going and all the rest of it, yeah. Not the dominance of the mobile phone, or it's universal and it's maybe just accepted to talk on the phone, to watch stuff on the phone, you know, YouTube reels and all of that. There has been a decrease in sort of quietness around the place, you know what I mean? But I mean, it's not just public transport, by the way. I mean, you have people with their loudspeakers on in cars, like having conversations, and they're not aware of it, but everybody outside the car for a radius of whatever, 10, 15, 20 yards, can hear a full conversation.
So they have the hands-free on, they're having their full-on conversation.
And sometimes they're like their private conversations, and you're hearing stuff that you're not meant to hear in a lot of cases, you know what I mean?
We have a dog behind us, mad to get on the radio.
There's more now. That's another public order offence. That arrest that dog.
I take it twice every day.
The bus?
Yeah, I take it home and into town every day, yeah. The TikTok is a mad thing. Like, literally, it's gas. Like, you hear everyone, what everyone's doing on their phones. Especially, like, it's usually, like, the older people who listen to the stuff really loudly on their phones, I've noticed.
For once, the younger people are not being blamed.
Do you know, like, obviously there's younger people too, but I never really noticed, because the younger people always have their headphones on.
Oh, what I notice is that people think they're in their living rooms, you know, putting your shoes on, like, the seats. Like, I don't want to be listening to your music, so put those headphones on. Same with, like, phone calls and stuff. Like people just have, like, private phone calls for, like, 20 minutes on a journey, and it's just not taking everyone into consideration.
And I know, because you travel a bit, do you notice differences in behaviour on public transport depending on what country you're in?
In France or something, like in every train cart, there's a particular place where you can take phone calls. So if someone were to be on their phone or be loud, they would immediately be kicked out and go to those specific places to take calls, so that, you know, they don't bother anyone.
The difficulty here for grumpy old fellas in considering something like this, Brian, you know, for grumpy old fellas like you, is that, contrary to what you hear in some of the vox pops there, I've noticed that a lot of younger people don't seem to be bothered by what the other person is doing beside them. And indeed, they're playing music out loud on their own device, and they seem to be able to focus on it and not what's playing elsewhere.
Yeah, and I wonder, is there a rural-urban divide here as well? I was in London recently and I was struck when I was on in the tube that pretty much a lot of people around me were listening to things without headphones, and it seemed to be more accepted in a more crowded or a bigger city, you know, than it would be in a smaller area.
Okay, what are the rules, though? Do Bus Éireann have rules?
I mean, a lot of it comes down to common sense, but obviously in the UK, as we said, the Lib Dems are trying to bring in a law. We do actually have rules and bylaws around public transport here already. They do cover listening to voices out loud, as well as what you can and can't consume, even on public transport. Mark Mulqueen is Head of Corporate Affairs and Communications at Bus Éireann. He ran through with me what the rules are on buses for listening and watching devices loudly.
There are two bylaws relevant here to this topic. And the first of them is that a passenger shall not sing, perform on a musical or other instrument, or use an audible radio, television, record player, tape recorder or portable apparatus on a vehicle. And the second bylaw that's relevant states a passenger shall not use a personal stereo, mobile phone or similar device so as to be a source of annoyance to other passengers on a vehicle. So they're quite clear. Now, I should add that we also have to temper that with people, stress that the need for people travelling on our service to be considerate, while being mindful that some of our passengers with additional needs may, you know, need to use devices that have some element of sound in them. The National Transport Authority have a whole set of good behaviour set out on their website. We've worked with them previously on campaigns.
Can I ask you one? It's the takeaway food
Could I bring in my chicken tikka masala from last night and lash into? Are there any restrictions on that?
Well, before we spoke, I had a look at what's there on the NTA site, which is the kind of the central authority. So that captures everybody, whether it's bus or train. I didn't see anything on the food choice. I mean, there's no question alcohol is absolutely banned, for instance, public transport and the use of it. The solution personally is in, and I'd say there's a communications man, but more intense communication. And you need to almost have a little bit of a would you really want this done to yourself sort of a piece in it. I think the last bit is that what we will look at doing is more of it into digital media, because people are sitting on buses and trains consuming digital media with headphones on. And that's where you can hit them with reminders on best behavior as much as on board note, because I think we all tune out a little bit with our headphones on and glued to our phones or our laptops. But no, there's nothing about chicken or any other food source, Brian.
So no TikTok, no cans. What else is verboten? You begin taking a look at the bylaws.
I had a look at those bylaws. A lot of it is common sense, obviously, but things like not placing your luggage somewhere that might cause an obstruction. You must queue in an orderly manner. Don't talk to the driver. We know you're not allowed to sell something on a bus.
Don't talk to the driver. I wonder, does that cover the mandatory saying thank you to the driver?
The mandatory thank you. Someone observed to me they felt that we're not saying that as much as we used to before.
No.
I think it's pretty much par for the course. You're not allowed to record something on your phone. There's a whole host of other bylaws related to how we should behave, including, as Mark said, not having the music or whatever you're viewing audible to other people, unless it's us, Philip, obviously.
You spoke to somebody who would literally put manners on you.
Literally. Patricia Mabry from the Etiquette Suite. She set up her business to teach etiquette and how to behave in certain situations. Now, she talked to me about what advice she would give to people around public transport and how we should behave ideally when we're on a bus or train. So this is some of what she had to say.
You wouldn't go and overcrowd people, and you would be very conscious if you're getting on your bus and you had loads of packages from your shopping, or you had a backpack. It's always nicer to maybe keep the backpack in front of you as you board the bus, and you should keep your bags tidied and not take up the seat adjacent to you. That's basic manners. Hygiene and cleanliness. You don't want to be eating very sticky foods or smelly foods in front of others. You certainly don't want to be spraying a very loud fragrance like a perfume or an aftershave or something. And if you have any litter, you take it home with you. So these are all just common sense ideas, but it's about respecting others and respecting the mode of transport that you're on.
So what about devices now? And I think everybody's experienced this. Someone opposite you is watching a movie or a series perhaps, or having a very loud conversation. It's on speakerphone and they don't have the headphones.
So that is so impolite, and it's just being rude to others around you. Manners would state that you respect others and you don't have the loud blaring music, or if you're on your cell phone, your mobile, that you certainly don't talk about the lunch meeting you just had and everybody knows your business on the bus. You should be quiet and discreet if it was an emergency phone call you had to make, or a very important one. So yeah, it is a problem for sure. People are afraid to approach people and say, please turn down the music for fear of any kind of negative altercation. You know, the world we're in today, technology driven, the art of conversation is lost.
Obviously, Patricia, I'm unlikely to find you with the shoes off and your feet on the seat opposite, am I?
You are.
Perhaps eating an onion pickle sandwich or something.
No, you wouldn't do that. But if I was on a long haul flight somewhere, I would get beautiful little slipper socks, things to put on if I was flying somewhere for 10 hours. I would, and that's perfectly acceptable.
At what age should you offer your seat to someone? What age should that person be? It's a tricky one sometimes, isn't it? You don't want to offend anyone.
You shouldn't wait to be asked for your seat. Your seat, you should offer it to the elderly, or perhaps maybe a lady that's expecting her baby, or maybe a woman with a child in a buggy, or somebody that might be less abled than another.
Some young lad offered me his seat on the bus relatively recently. I felt like giving him a clip across the ear.
Well, you get used to that now, Philip. I could see you with those pair of slipper socks, all right.
You know what? They should actually have Patricia Mabry doing the information ads on buses, because that's a voice that you'd listen to now and that you'd observe everything that she says.
You'd sit up a bit straighter, wouldn't you?
You really would. Now, a lot of people giving out about you being a grumpy old man and leaping in defence of young people. I'm only joking, but... people are making the point in the texts that have come in that this is actually across the board behaviour. Hi, Philip. I was in hospital waiting room last week listening to a man having a full conversation on speaker with a full waiting room listening in, and he wasn't young, says Mary. Catherine says it's not always young people playing loud music that's the problem. I went to Galway last week on the train and one mature gentleman rang his friend and yelled at the top of his voice for about 20 minutes, disturbing the peace of everyone else. Do you want to apologise for that now, Brian?
Well, like, I think, like, whatever about the bus, there's no excuse on the train because you can just stand into the middle of the carriage, can't you? Anytime I have to take a call like that, I just stand into the middle of the carriage. It's no big deal.
Who'd be calling you?
Whether you're hoping for a somewhat silent trip on public transport this weekend or just keeping it local, there are lots of events around the country for the bank holiday, and Morning Ireland heard about a few of them.
Our reporter Sheila Nocton is joining us now for a quick look at some of what's going on. So Sheila, tell us.
Yeah, so if you don't want to go to the beach or mountain biking, you can first head up to Breffni County and you're going to experience the unveiling of Ireland's largest drum. So this is called An Rúla Búla Drumma and it's at Dromani Spirit Organic Farm in Milltown in Cavan on Sunday. And this is a community event, also importantly a sober event, and the mind behind the event and the drum is Garode Teevan.
It is a 13 foot wide ceremonial drum carefully painted with symbols of the old Celtic wheel, and it's really trying to bring communities back together. Everyone will have an opportunity to play it and put an intention for themselves in it.
Further north, you can go to the Festival of Fools. That's in Belfast. It marks 20 years of circus and street theatre. So it's going to take place in the city centre and Cathedral Quarter. And we're promised to laugh because there's going to be acrobatics, comedy, juggling, clowning. And that's starting Saturday and running across the weekend. Or you can go to the Midlands and the Sleep Bloom Walking Festival. It returns to Offaly. It's actually in its 28th year and it's on from the 3rd to the 5th of May. So that's guided hikes through the Midlands. And there will be an expert who'll have local stories all along the way. So it's a good one for anyone who likes to be outdoors. An interesting one actually in County Clare, and it's a Viking invasion of Craganowan. So you're going to have Norse warriors, they're going to take over the historic site and they're going to turn it into a Viking village.
And Sheila, finally, what about Dublin? What's happening?
Oh, well, there's plenty in Dublin, but one that stands out is a multicultural festival called Connect. It's at Millennium Park in Blanchardstown. It's on Saturday and Sunday, 12 to 6. Performances celebrating cultures from Poland, Slovakia, Nigeria and Ireland, of course, and plenty of food stalls there too, so you won't go hungry.
Whether you're going to an event or staying at home, you can still listen to your favourite RTÉ Radio 1 programmes right across the weekend. You can also listen back on the website rte.ie/radio or via the RTÉ Radio app. And of course, you'll get us too on your preferred podcast platforms. In the meantime, from me, Trevor Keegan, do have a lovely long weekend and thanks for listening. Bye for now.